Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
I think you're muted there, Kevin.
I'm unmuted. I'm found the button. Hey, good morning, friends. Good morning, listeners. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week, we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, humor, and of course, all important, progressive persuasion. Although Brian's concept was less is more, more or less, in reality, we could never have enough of Brian's magic in our lives. Here on the Zoom InfoSpace this week, some great friends that we've come to know over the years. Former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, recovering back surgery patient, and West Texas devotee, Truman O'Brien. Truman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm here. I'm here. I'm improving. You know, what I said the other day was I'm getting better. I'm just not getting as better as quickly as I want to. You know what I mean? So there you go.
Yes. You've done better at getting better in the past.
There you go. That's it. Thank you. I needed that.
All right. Hey, also joining us today is advocate, arbitrator, mediator, Fulbright specialist, former law professor, and former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Craig Bellis. With all those formers, Craig, you are still quite busy. How have you been?
I've been good. I've been very good. I was very happy with yesterday's football game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Seahawks unbelievably stayed in first place. They were in first place with a 0-0 record.
That's right.
And now they're in first place with a 1-0 record.
There you go.
And beat their old buddy Russell Wilson of the Broncos. So that was quite a game, too.
What did you think of Russell's expression when the Broncos kicked that potentially game-winning field goal and it didn't go through?
I thought, like Truman and I were talking about just before we came on the air, he probably thought, why in the world would we try a 900-yard field goal?
Well, you know, when that's his game, man. I mean, that's what he does. Yeah. And I just don't think the Denver coach realizes what he's got there.
Well, for anybody like me who's actually gone like golfing in the Denver area, you know, it's a one club less stroke every because the ball does go further, but yeah, not that far.
No,
that's true.
Not that far. Hey, also with us, historian Skipper of the Vachon, a president of the Vachon Heritage Museum, and most importantly, guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning. Being a guardian of the galaxy is hard work, I can tell you. But this morning, and it takes a community. This morning I woke up, I lived at Ellisport, KVI Beach, looked out, and there's this large, probably 8-foot by 5-foot piece of styrofoam floating out just past where we anchor our crab boat. So I get my binoculars out and look. First thought it was an upturned boat, you know, sort of, wow, did somebody flip a boat? But no, it looked like styrofoam. So I called my neighbor, Craig, who has about a 12-foot aluminum boat. So get down there, row out to it. And it's this massive piece of an old dock, you know, concrete on three sides and styrofoam in the middle and a big, you know, beam, you know, sort of a 4x6 beam, you know, 10 feet long lashed to it. So I tie onto it and I row it back to shore. And then my other neighbor, Steve Bergman from Zero Waste Vachon, comes down to the beach. We walk it down into the estuary and ground it and tie it off to the bulkhead so it won't float away again. And then Nadine Adelstein from Zero Waste Vachon is lining up to get the styrofoam taken away. So you can't be guardian of the galaxy without a community around you.
Good
but
job.
I had my workout. I had to take my Advil when I got back.
I'll bet you did. You're going to be sorry tomorrow, you know.
But it is beautiful out there. You know, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. It's flat calm. It's just gorgeous out there.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And when you mentioned the floating dock, I always, my first question was, does the transfer station take that? But even better to recycle it. Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, this week, our special guest, Small Talk guest, is Debbie Jackson. And by the way, the week is September 13th. That's the day we're on today. Debbie is the lead organizer of Vashon to Voters, a postcard writing group with Indivisible Vashon. Debbie, thank you for joining us. I hope you're doing well, and you might share a little bit of how your week's been going.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. It's kind of overwhelming to be with the leader of the galaxy and everybody, you know, I'm pretty impressed. But yeah, let's see, this week I had a friend visiting from Bend and her exchange student from Italy, and we did the tourist thing, and it was actually pretty awesome. Space Needle, Pike Place Market, Thule Glass, the Van Gogh exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. And the passenger ferry. So we impressed Italy a lot.
Good.
And great weather, no smoke.
Good to have, yeah, a less amount of lesser smoke.
Yeah.
So, mine is the voice of Kevin Jones of Indivisible Vashon, the aforementioned Indivisible Vashon, but also the Vashon Climate Action Group. And you know that we collectively strive to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. I will mention, by the way, before we dive into Small Talk, that I have been away for a while, by the way. I've been Zooming in, but I've been away for a while, and I got back to the island, and things have changed. Granny's is now accepting 4 grocery bags of stuff per donation, so, you know, they're up in their game.
Ooh, that's great.
Maybe old docks.
Empty a few things out of our house.
I haven't checked their sign to see whether they would handle any docks, but if you probably have to put it into 4 grocery bags per trip. So we'll see. The other thing I noticed now is I came into town, my weekly trip to town to pick up groceries, that now the 4-way stop at Center is now the newest traffic jam again every year at about 3 p.m. weekdays because of school being in session and the folks who basically pick up their kids at school or drop them off, pick up in the afternoon. And the other thing is that over 65 people on Vashon have added their names to the Washington Clean Energy Committee letter. You'll remember from a couple of episodes ago, we had Don Marsh on from the Washington Clean Energy Commission. The letter was opposing the rate increase proposed by Puget Sound Energy. And listeners, get out your pencils, because you can still add your name to the letter. There's still this weekend to get that done. The place to go online, tinyurl.com/PSE-RATE-HIKE. tinyurl.com/PSE-RATE-HIKE. And go ahead and add your name to the over 65 people who've already done so.
Do you have to be over 65?
I hope we get over 100 people. And so, no, the number of signers does no way relate to the age of the signature.
Good. Right. Okay, good.
I think we qualify.
Yeah, we all do, yes.
Yeah, we're good to go. But I know that there's at least 3 or 4 other people, because I've been appealing personally with emails for people to sign. So you know who you are. But awesome. Really great response from Vashon. We outnumber Seattle respondents 2-1, by the way, just so you all know. So the power of the Brown Briefly and Small Talk. Let's see. Are there any other shameless self-promotion announcements before we dive into Small Talk? Truman.
I got just a quick one. As you mentioned, I'm recovering from back surgery, and it's been a long and arduous road. But I have to tell you, you know, that Craig and I put a new propeller on our airplane that we share.
Ooh.
And
wait a minute. Put the propeller on?
Well, I said we because I was a supervisor, and I did an excellent job as a supervisor, mind you. I couldn't get up my chair, but I supervised. Anyway, they got it on, and just on Sunday, I was able to actually get in the airplane and test fly it. And it is phenomenal. We really, really like it. It's going to be cool. So that's our little bit of news.
All right. Well, supervisors claim if the job got done well, then they were successful. That's but Craig, right. how about the union laborers?
Yeah, I know. As an old Teamster, I do have to stand up for the individuals who are actually wielding the wrenches.
That's right.
I told Truman, I said, I don't want you picking up that propeller and trying to put it up there or something. Yeah. So that would have been, he would have too. Yeah, you know, I always sit down.
I'm not the brightest one. Yeah.
I thought it was risky him flying the airplane. Yeah. But it was worth it, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, gosh, fabulous. That's fabulous. Great.
All right, nice. Well, I'll give you credit for being a former Teamster, not an old team. No, old yeah, Teamster.
There you go.
just to, on a theme. All right. Anything else, Bruce? Anything you want to add before we dive in?
Well, just the Heritage Museum was just awarded an NEH grant, which is a big deal. You know, NEH is doesn't just give money to anybody. And so I was very impressed. We had a very sound proposal to redo the permanent exhibit, to retell Vachon's story at the museum. Got a grant of $287,000 from NEH, which covers about two-thirds of what the project will cost. So I'll be knocking on your doors. I'll be coming to see you with my hands open.
Great. That's great.
But it's very exciting to rethink. I mean, the museum opened almost 20 years ago now. And so we've done some minor revisions to parts of the permanent exhibit, but to reconceptualize and rethink about how we want to tell Vachon's story and Vachon's stories, multiple stories, because it's not just one story. And also to make sure that the stories of those who are not always part of this, of the story, are told. So it's a very exciting sort of prospect, and we'll be coming out to the community, we'll be coming out to groups around the island, to communities, to nonprofits, and sort of making presentations, making sure everybody has input and sort of a voice in what the story will be. So it's very exciting, but thanks, Kevin.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is very exciting. Maybe you can start a competition between the North Islanders and the South Islanders. And that's the whole concept about how the island was kind of split in two for so many years we don't think about it all anymore today. But that's just a tremendous accomplishment, and it's going to be great for the museum and for the island.
You know, one of the things that struck me while you were describing that, Bruce, is that we did telling stories from the Vachon Community Care, one of those, and one of them was some older gentlemen from the island, and what it was like when they were, and the thing that just blew me away was they were talking about being on the west side of the island, and to go to the east side of the island was like an all-day thing. You just pop over there. It was a big deal to get across the island, and that always struck me as fascinating. And I can't wait to see what you guys do with that.
Well, we remember that story. If I can jump in, Craig, that north south kind of thing is Tom Langland tells the story. He was in he went to Burton Elementary School, and he had his best friend, moved away, and so the friendship sort of ended. And And then they get to middle school, and all of a sudden his friend's there. And, where have you been? Well, we moved to the north end. Wait a minute. It's, might as well move to Italy, right?
That's poignant.
Wow.
Yeah, that's back when Vachon had a school system set up. So Burton Elementary was, Burton and Vachon Elementary was the north end. And the kids didn't even know each other until they got into middle school at McMurray in the late 60s when that opened. Wow. And then the high school, of course, once they got to high school, they got to know people from all over the island.
Now it's Parking Lot Hill and the people who just go into Seattle versus the rest. They've never been into the town of Vachon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Our lives have changed.
When we moved here, Burton was first through third, and Vachon Elementary was fourth through sixth or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, can I just give a quick shout out?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to thank the Vashon community, Vashon Mori community, for again supporting and tolerating the Passport to Pain bike ride on Saturday. Yeah. It was pretty successful, despite the fact that the ferry went down on the north end, the ferry was out on the south end, the smoke descended. We didn't have anybody say they had respiratory issues. So so thanks to Vashon again for... And the Rowing Club is about 32 years old, so maybe we'll fit into the history museum somehow.
All right. Well, that Passport to Pain is a grueling opportunity to get your two-wheeled human-powered vehicles out on the hills around Vashon Mori Islands. And yeah, Debbie, I was thinking of you and the Rowing Club and the Passport to Pain, as we kept hearing about ferry outages and then the yeah. air quality challenges. But you persisted and pulled it off. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, I was the cookie coordinator this year. So the most important part of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Priorities.
I thought it was very creative the way each stop was basically a different movie.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. I mean, it was really well done. So kudos.
It's a pretty, everybody. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the e-bike community is growing, and I don't know if you've considered an e-bike category for the Passport to Pain, but you know, people are missing out on the cookies and the movie and all the creativity goes into it. So you know, if you don't ride it, maybe you should at least, you know, turn out and be a spectator for next year.
Yep.
All right, well, Debbie, speaking of good work that's being done, you are the leader for Vashon to Voters. Tell us a little bit about how Vashon to Voters got started and what you are trying to, what are you accomplishing through the work you're doing?
Well, it started, I believe, with Marie Brown in 20, well, I don't know exactly when she started, but some time back, and people would meet in person at Gather. And then when the pandemic started, Marie got super busy. I think she did accounting and helped people with their applying for their COVID funds, relief funds, et cetera. And so I volunteered to kind of coordinate that. Well, it was all on COVID, on Zoom. So we haven't really met in person since 2020, at least. But our goal is to reach out to Democrats or people that lean left and try to encourage them to get out and vote. So we don't try to change anybody's opinion. You know, we don't generally write to Republicans unless we don't realize. just bring the choir together and get them out there in the polls, and we feel like things will go the right way, we hope.
All right. So you're writing postcards to encourage people to participate in mm-hmm. the democratic process by voting. Right. Right. How do you come up with addresses, and what's behind the scenes that people maybe don't see, the work that you do?
Yes, well, there's a lot of organizations, actually. I was just Googling some this morning that provide addresses, and I believe, although I don't know, I'm not real knowledgeable about it, that they get information to addresses from the voter rolls. So that's all public information. And so different organizations put together lists. This year, we're especially using an organization called Activate America, formerly Flip the West, that got its start in California races and found that postcarding was an effective way to get people out to the polls. And so we're using them. They actually are, we're writing for various candidates. So it's not just get out and vote. So there's candidates in swing states, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Anyway, states where we can really make a difference by just swinging the number of votes our way. We also use postcards in swing states, and I have... big thing with them is they supply postcards, so we don't have to buy them. And nice. So those are more get out the vote, not candidate specific. And so we've had just blank vote cards, which we use with addresses. Not sure making sense. But anyway, this year we have really two basic campaigns. One, I send out addresses to people that I get from these organizations, along with a script, so you don't have to come up with a script yourself. And we'll use these blank vote cards. And then postcards to voters, sends us postcards and a script, and we will mail those out on the date that they say.
All right. Hey, Truman. Sounds like Truman, you had a question.
Yeah, I'm impressed that you cover all these states, all the swing states. I mean, that's amazing. And and do you have, is there a specific message that you're trying to get out, other than get out to vote or support that one particular candidate? Is there a tagline or anything that you have on the?
No, in fact, the postcards are supposed to be pretty neutral, not something with a real message, you know, lean to the left, sort of slogan, you know.
And do you make it obvious that it's from Washington State or Vashon?
No, we try. There is a postmark on there, of course. Mm-hmm. And from what I've read, is a lot of times people don't really read the postmark. But there have been some campaigns in the past where we've written the postcard and then we send those to the organizer in a particular state, so that the postmark is, say, Montana or Alaska or something. Mm-hmm. That's not the usual, but that has been happened.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm curious how people receive that. You know, what are you guys out there telling me what to do? You know, kind of a thing.
Right,
I wonder if you get that kind of response.
Right. Well, and that's one reason we try to keep things pretty neutral. We don't want to come off as the bossy people from Washington or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know another thing, Debbie, that is kind of guides the process. We tend not to write postcards until after the primary election, in case, you know, weighing in on one progressive candidate versus another. But it is definitely progressive persuasion. I think, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we are intending to connect with folks who will support the progressive candidate once they've been through the primary and we know who's going to be in the general. Is that a fair characterization, do you think?
That's pretty good. Although I think Activate America really did weigh in on the primaries this year. Like for Mark Kelly in Arizona, we did writing before the primary. We also see who else. There has been some where we have done some writing before the primary, but that isn't, you're correct, that's usually not the case.
Yeah, and some of those, like, candidates are uncontested, I know. So or primary challengers. Well, hey, I know that you have a goal for 2022. Tell us about that and how's it going?
Oh, yeah. Well, Kevin helped us, encouraged me to set a goal and to motivate people. And definitely we have some good writers. Our goal was 10,000 postcards, reaching 10,000 people. And I added up last night, and we have 10,360 so far. And of course, fall, just from Vashon. Although I want to give a big shout out to Annie and Burian, because there's I think she knew somebody that was on our Vashon list. And so she's gotten really involved, and she has really got a group going over there writing postcards. I sent her a lot of addresses. Anyway, we're over our 10,000 goals, so doing well.
You heard it here first on the Brown Briefly. Yeah.
So my question is, who pays for the postage?
Well, the people who send the postcards pay the postage. Now, we've had some generous donors. Can I say Rob and Ginny? Some others who have donated money, so that if there anybody needs help with postcard stamps, we can furnish them. And we keep all of our cards and some extra stamps and our postcard depot, which is up east, a little east of Thriftway. So we have a volunteer who lets us use her place as a central area where people can pick up their postcard packets.
Nice. So, hey, Craig, your thoughts?
Well, just a quick point of information. I can't keep track of what postage is these days. How much is a postcard? The people who are paying for
it. Pay it. Yeah. I think it's 44 cents for a postcard stamp. Hmm. It went up about several cents recently, or, a month or so ago.
You might put a little message down there about the head of the post service. No, that wouldn't be in line with what you're doing. I'm sorry.
Well, I think it was like three postcards for a dollar. I think it was around 33 or 34 cents. Yeah. And I know it went up. You know, I've gone into the post because I write as well. And I've gone into the post office, asking them for postcard stamps. And I can tell you that many, many times the person behind the counter says, "We're all sold out." Mm-hmm. And I think, okay, Debbie's been working.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I think it's $40 for 100 stamps. So maybe it's like 40 cents a piece. But again, like we do have a little assist for people who are prolific writers but can't quite come up with the money to do the stamps.
You were right on your first guess, 44 cents.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Oh, good.
44. Cool. Wow. Yeah. We got to pay for those new electric vehicle mail trucks. So that's at least right. As long as they're electric vehicle, I'm happier to pay the higher rate.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, so Debbie, you've got a postcard depot, you provide postcards, the script, people can drop in and pick up a package of postcards, they can do some writing. The election's coming up. How long do you figure people have to write postcards before we're going to be moving on to some other form of contacting voters?
Well, some of these, like the postcards to swing states, they want the postcards mailed close to the November election because they have found it's more effective that way. So the last mailing date for those, or the mailing date for some of those cards, is October 28th. So we can write up until that time. Other campaigns where we're promoting a certain candidate, I don't know for sure how long we'll be writing, but I would say at least probably a month or so. Well, so people still have time to get in on the fun.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like some of those mailing dates are almost 6 weeks away now. So, for our listeners who want to get involved and participate in the work you're doing, how do they get involved with writing posters with Vashon to Voters?
Well, the best way is to contact me at debby.jackson. The usual spelling, at indivisiblevashon.org, and that'll I'll get your email and I'll send you information and you get your set up right away. So send you addresses
I had a question, Debbie. Do you ever hear back from people you write postcards to? Are they addressed individually? I mean, they're addressed to an individual, but do individuals sign them, or does it come from this amorphous kind of, how does that all work?
Yeah, you're supposed to assign your first name and not have it put a return address or your last name or any kind of contact information. And we're instructed never to contact people again. Once you're done with the addresses, destroy the list so that then it's not just sitting around for, because that's important, personal information for people.
So I can tell you that, I'm not writing as much as I did 2 years ago, but I've launched, a couple of hundred postcards at times. And, I can say personally that, if you're going to sit down, maybe watch an hour of news at night. It's amazing how many postcards you can write off at the same time. Yeah. And particularly during those commercial breaks, right? You don't have to even get up out of the chair.
Right. And some people find that it really is. It relieves their angst, about the situations of the day, to sit down and write postcards and know that they're making a difference during TV shows or I'm going up to Alaska on Thursday to babysit for my grandson. And, you know, that's 3.5 hours. You can get a lot of postcards done in that time. So,
mm-hmm. On the plane. Yeah. On the flight up.
Yeah.
I had another question. It's a little off topic, not off topic, but I mean, this whole effort is to try and get people, progressive voters or left leaning voters mm-hmm. to come out and vote. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I mean, it's just a great way to sort of mobilize the base, if you will. My question is, I've seen a number of reports about how the Democratic Party is paying for ads to support very far right wing mm-hmm. candidates with the hope that they get elected so that you have a moderate to left Democrat running against a very far right Republican. And it was sort of, what are the ethics of that to you? How do you respond to that when you money that you donate to the Democratic Party goes to pay for some wingnut Republican in some state?
Yeah, probably Kevin can answer better than me, but just personally, I feel like I have mixed feelings about doing that. Maybe it's a good mm-hmm. strategy. Maybe it'll ensure that the Democrat wins, that the independents who might vote Republican and say, no way, I'm going to vote for that person, and they'll vote Democrat. But I don't know. I'm curious what Kevin feels about that.
Well, I'm curious what other people think. I know, Truman, maybe you've got some thoughts, or Craig?
I'm not a big fan of that strategy. Yeah. That seems to be dishonest and manipulative. And a classic example of the ends justifying the means. I just think it's intellectually and ethically unacceptable. Although I can appreciate the arguments that are made on the other side because there's so much at stake. Do I 100% condemn it? No. Am I happy about it? No. So.
Well, I would have trouble supporting some of these wing nuts, as you call them, because boy, they are some are really out there. And I know, I mean, I get the idea, but man, to even do any promotion of those characters is beyond me, you know.
And I think, Debbie, it's fair to say that Vachon to Voters does not engage in that part of the political scene.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm. No, we're not involved in that kind of campaigning at all.
There you go. So so supporting progressive candidates in multiple states where the elections are very competitive. I know, Debbie, that Indivisible Vachon does some analysis to see where those are really competitive races where you can make a difference. And Debbie.Jackson at IndivisibleVachon.org, DEBBY.JACKSON. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, yeah. And once you sign up, you get the secret handshake decoder ring so you know where the postcard depot is
exactly.
And how to engage. Okay, awesome. So, yeah. All right, yeah. Any other questions for Debbie before we move on to discussions of events? Okay, Debbie, you're absolutely welcome to stay on board with us if you'd like, because we're going to dive into a few topics that I know you're going to be interested in. But let's see, did I hear it? Okay, I think we're good to move. Okay. So local news, I wanted to point out an article I read in the Beachcomber as I was going through the multiple Beachcombers that stacked up during my absence. Sheriff deputy response to Desiree McIntyre's alleged assault incident on Vachon last month, where there were accusations, according to the Beachcomber, of exaggerated testimony and a statement, "I can't recommend you press charges because it's a small island." And apparently these are attributed to the King County Sheriff deputies who responded to the assault incident. Questions of exaggerating. At the VMICC meeting, it is Monday the 19th, so it's next week at 7 p.m. Captain Heather Volpe of the King County Sheriff's Office will give us an update on Vachon crimes. Just wanted to point out that there's an opportunity. What do people think about how did they react to the news in the Beachcomber on that? Anybody want to jump in?
Yeah. This is reflective of something that a lot of people forget. Obviously, I have an opinion about those comments generally, assuming they're all correct. But it also points out something else, and it's that in the criminal justice system, there's a difference between the mud hut and the mansion. The mud hut is the police on the street and the amount of rights and discretion that are involved versus the mansion, which is the trial court and the actual trial of the individual where their rights and there's very little discretion as to what goes on there. But the point here is that this is classic of the police have tremendous discretion at the incipiency or the allegations of crimes as to whether or not they want to arrest somebody. Then later, the next step, whether a prosecutor wants to charge somebody. And then it becomes a little tighter all along the way as you go. But at the first step, the police can say, we don't have the resources. We have the experience. This doesn't work. We don't think it's a good idea to do this, that, or the next thing. And I know that doesn't sit well with individuals, especially if a police officer is as outspoken as this one seems to have been in this article. Something to keep in mind.
Well, you know, I find that fascinating, Craig, and I never really made that connection. But one of the things that does strike me is that if you have a police force that's embedded in the community, that knows the community, I can see where there could be some discretion in determining whether or not to go after someone.
Yes.
I mean, it makes sense to me. Never really thought about that in that way, but so
you know that from experience.
Yeah.
That's not from you being arrested, but from
not recently.
Tell me more.
Yeah.
from you having some issues at your home and you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was burgled in the middle of the night and working with the police or the sheriff's deputies was very interesting. Saying, look, you know, unless you have really hard video evidence of them actually doing the crime, we're not going to go after them because we don't, you know, we just can't prove it. And it's a petty theft. And anyway, the individual finally did get caught. And so I was vindicated. But it was very interesting, that whole approach.
Yeah, well, speaking of this question, I did cross paths with Dr. Stephen Norse yesterday, as a matter of fact, on the ferry. And if you don't know Dr. Norse, he does have a series on Voice of Vashon, Is Abled. And Dr. Norse himself gets around in a wheelchair and he talks about abilities, disabilities, and what it means to folks. He is considering offering, you know, ride-alongs with King County sheriffs on the mainland and on Vashon. I think to talk, you know, to sort of, and then to interview folks who've gone on these rides is his current concept. Hmm. And this whole notion of how do we interact as individuals with our police enforcement when we're a victim of a crime or perceived victim of a crime. And I think Stephen's idea might help shed some light on that. I'm curious, this notion of one of the deputies asking whether or not the testimony was exaggerated. Craig, in your experience, does it make sense for law enforcement to question a person coming forward just to make sure that they have their facts straight? Or is this maybe more nefarious than this, given the little bit of information we know?
Yeah, that's the point. When we have very little information, but yeah, it's part of the job of the police officer to make a judgment with regards to the credibility of the complaint that's being made, to ask witnesses and to test the credibility and veracity of the individual who's making the complaint. Those are all part of a classic police training. I do have to say, Steve Nurse, who's a very good friend of mine, his idea of trying to get ride-alongs is fabulous. I don't know how many of you have ever done that, but you do learn a lot about police behavior and police procedures when you do that. So if you ever get an opportunity, I'd encourage you. I had the honor. Let me one other thing. I had an honor many years ago of giving the graduation speech at the police academy, and I stressed the fact that in terms of the relationship of the citizenry with the criminal justice system, for the most part, it comes down to the way police treat individuals on the street. In terms of courteousness or the opposite of that, as we've seen over the last couple of years, that's made the news, makes a huge difference in the way American citizens view the police and the criminal justice system in general.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Well, on this topic, again, the Captain Heather Volpe of King County Sheriff's Office will be participating, or is at least certainly is planning to be, and is on the agenda at the Vashon Maury Island Community Council meeting next Monday, the 19th of September at 7 p.m. Go to vmicc.net online, and you're going to find information about how to join that meeting. It starts at 7 o'clock. And so if this is an area of interest for you, crimes on Vashon, and in particular, this reporting in the Beachcomber, might be something you'd want to participate in. So, yeah, the public service announcement. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I could jump in and just make a comment, too. What we see is an increasing level of violence, increasing level of confrontation in American society in general. And I think this is happening all over the world. Part of it's coming out of the pandemic, of course, but it's also, a level of confrontation that's taking place in our society. And to think that Vashon is going to be immune from that, we are a bubble, but we're not that much of a bubble. So we're just seeing much more incidences of aggressive behavior, aggressive driving, speeding. I mean, all of those kind of things that go along with kind of the repressed anger that come out of two years of COVID is expressing itself in cultural and social ways that we just need to be aware of. We need to be ready to deal with them. And the police are not always the best way to deal with them. Craig, what do you
think?
Yes. I'm sorry, what was that?
I was interested in your reaction to that. Do you think there's just a general uptick going on?
I do, and I've used this phrase before here, I think, on the Brown Briefly, about the government being the ever-present example. And at the risk of crossing over the persuasive position, I think we've had a very bad example in recent years with regards to general behavior. I've said it many times, if my children behave the way some of the individuals in our leadership have behaved, I would disown them.
Mm-hmm. But this is,
and you know how to do that, I bet.
this is a great segue. I don't know if you folks heard about this new book, Holding the Line, by Jeffrey Berman, that's coming out today. Jeffrey Berman is the guy who was from the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York, the guy that was fired by Barr. And in fact, it was announced that he was leaving the office, and he went, whoa, wait a minute, what? I don't know anything about that. And then he was going to resign, and he goes, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not resigning. Well, anyway, this is kind of a tell-all book, and man, it sounds like it's really going to be an indictment against Barr and several of the practices of our former illustrious leader. But just heard a lot about it last night. I think this is pretty fascinating.
Bound to be another bestseller. Of course, they've been releasing snippets, and he's been on the Sunday shows, yeah, I understand, yeah, yeah. Talking about what's in there between the covers, so to speak. Anyway, national news actually is the perfect segue, Truman. Thank you. I was taking a look, and I do occasionally dip into this Presidential Historians Survey, who they look back at past presidents and give them some scores, some votes for who was the best and not so best in terms of prior presidents. And so according to the C-SPAN Presidential Historian Survey of 2021, for example, Lincoln received nearly 900 votes. Trump received about a third as many, and Obama received about right in the middle. So Lincoln about 900, Trump about 300, Obama about 700. So interestingly, there are two past presidents lower than Trump, Andrew Johnson and James Buchanan. So Bruce, I have to ask, what did Johnson and Buchanan do? And will Trump stay ahead of them in this voting scheme of historians, or will he eventually sink deeper into the mire at the bottom of the list?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, Andrew Johnson, of course, you know, the only president to be impeached, although he wasn't convicted until, you know, impeachment became a regular sort of process of the American political system in the 1990s. Andrew Johnson was the successor of Abraham Lincoln, vice president when Lincoln was assassinated. So Johnson sort of just mishandled the whole beginning of Reconstruction and sort of derailed a lot of the things that Lincoln had in place, and ultimately led to sort of the conflict that emerged over the nature of Reconstruction. And so that's why he's down at the bottom. James Buchanan is an interesting figure in terms of our times, because James Buchanan, 15th president from 1857 to 1860, was president. That's just before the Civil War. Only president from Pennsylvania ever elected, only bachelor president. Every other president has been married. But Buchanan sort of totally misunderstood what was going on in America with the sectional divide that led to the Civil War. You know, and you can see elements of that in our society today. You know, America's a very divided country, and probably more divided than it has been since the 1850s. And of course, the struggle in the 1850s was over slavery, and the constitutional structure favored the Southern Democrats and the slaveholders and the slave states, because of the nature of the structure of the Senate. And Buchanan sort of just went along with that. You know, 2 weeks before the Dred Scott decision, he said basically, oh, it's no big deal. You know, the sectional divide is no big deal. Well, Dred Scott sort of set up, I mean, Dred Scott was the decision that said the Congress had no right to regulate slavery. And that sort of that just pushed all the buttons that led ultimately to the conflict of the Civil War. And, you know, I mean, Civil War wasn't totally all about slavery. There were other issues as well. But slavery was the issue that sort of divided and sort of identified the sectional divide between North and South that led to the conflict. And in my sort of analysis, looking at things today, I mean, we're in a very similar situation. You know, the nation's very, very divided. You know, we had a former president who was stoking the flames. We have a president right now who is articulating the dangers of that divide. And if we were to elect somebody like a Buchanan, a sort of, you know, pie in the sky, you know, to whistle the problems away in 2024, we could see another American Civil War. So it's important this next election, I think, that we don't go with a James Buchanan. And that's one reason why he's on the bottom, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it turns out that, you know, Johnson and Buchanan, of course, neither one of them, as far as we know, tried to overturn a free and fair election in the country. So what do you think in 2022 or 2023 when the historians rack and stack their votes? Where do you suppose Trump's going to sink or swim?
Oh, I think Trump's going to continue to decline, you know, and you know, I mean, again, like any president, you know, it's not all bad, you know, I mean, but the tone he set, the and Craig talked about this, just the example he set for the country has been highly divisive, and it's going to continue to be that way until he's no longer a political player, hopefully behind bars.
Yeah, in an orange suit. The orange suit that'll match his makeup. You know, I've read
color coordination.
Yeah, there you go. I've read over the years that all conflicts, all wars are economic. And I'm wondering, you know, I'm thinking about the Civil War in particular. I mean, slavery, of course, is the big issue, but that in itself is economic as well. The plantation owners and the way the, you know, they worked their economies. So I'm wondering now how that economic model fits into this divisiveness that we're encountering now. Is it the southern states where there's, I mean, just like before, where their economies are lower than the rest of the country? I mean, what do you think about that, Bruce? Do you think there's any validity?
I think it's very much, I mean, the divide right now is very much economic. And it's between those who feel they're being left behind, even though they're not. Right. They have a huge amount of privilege, but feel like they're being left behind by immigrants coming in, by minorities getting rising up and becoming more of an economic power. I mean, so it's basically a white fear, and it's an older white fear that's driving this. And it is economic, but it's not real.
Right, it's one of my army buddies from the South was saying Obama's given our country away, and that was his comment. And I said, to whom is he giving it to, Joe? And he said, you know, I thought you were one of the smartest of our group. He said, no, I'm not so sure. So I think, but you know, that is the question. You really believe that this country's your rights? You feel like your rights are being given away? But it's only because of diversity and equality within that diverse community. So.
There are theories of human behavior that are based totally on class.
Sure.
People act, you know, what motivates them to act a particular way or feel a particular way. And I think what you've got here, more than we've seen in many years, is that class insecurity, class resentment, the whole feeling that I need somebody else to look down on, and the whole tribalism of your enemies are my enemies are your enemies. I'm hard pressed to say that it's primarily economic. Certainly, it has an economic facet to it, but I think it has more to do with just pure behavioral, cultural, anthropological, emotional feelings that don't necessarily arise out of economics, but have an economic component.
So. Yeah.
I will have to say that one of the statements that I particularly appreciated in doing research on progressive concepts is the one that says, we all do better when we all do better. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand and agree with the human condition of wanting to feel one rung higher on the ladder. But as I see in a system like we have, is that we can really inspire people to do their absolute best. And I can also tell you that when I was involved with competitive cycling, I joined a team that had multiple people who were from Europe, Irish, British, Italian. Every one of them said, I'm in America because I have opportunity here. And collectively, we together can make advances that you could never make in my country, because people in Britain were held to their class positions and they could never move out of that. Mm. So I really resonate with the, when we all do better, we all do better.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's move on. Last time we very briefly touched on the Department of Justice and the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago for what seemed to now be amazingly critical national information contained in classified documents that were found at the beach resort of the former president, including in desk drawers and apparently in closets. And in addition to the storage room, which presumably had a lock on it, the Department of Justice has appealed the ruling, which would have allowed a special master to review those documents. Craig, I'm curious, now that that issue has been appealed by the Department of Justice, how likely do you think the judge's ruling will be reversed?
Wow.
Sorry. Oh, should I retract the question?
No. Should it be reversed from a legal standpoint? Yeah, it should. It's got all sorts of flaws and holes in it. Will it be? Well, who knows? And it's being actually attacked at both the district court level, sort of on a reconsideration. You know, like, you can't do that. Let's do this. You know, we'll agree to not, you know, to let the special master look at everything except for the stuff that's got the stamps and whatnot on it, the top secret. And then also on appeal. And, of course, the 11th Circuit's like one of the most conservative circuits, appellate circuits in the United States. Will it be reversed? I don't know. I think that the appellate court will have a hard time affirming it, because they have to write an opinion that makes sense. And occasionally they'll run into situations where it's very hard to write an opinion to support and affirm a district court judge's opinion.
But didn't the DOJ just approve, though?
They're working at a 2 or 3 track attack on it. Yeah. They said we're not resistant to the special master that's being appointed. They have to proceed on on that basis. Those special masters, surprisingly, that the Trump team recommended are legitimate, you know, individuals to do this job. But of course, you know, for some individuals in litigation, justice delayed is justice granted.
Yeah.
In their minds. And that is primarily what this seems to be, because the briefs that I've read from the right, from the Trump teams, are pure gaslighting. There's attempts. You know, lawyers will argue in the alternative. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with saying, okay, if you don't like that argument, Your Honor, here's a backup argument, and we should win on this argument. And here's another one. If you don't like the first two, here's another one. But when you're making arguments that are totally inconsistent and just conflict, I mean, this whole treatment of the documents is just extraordinary. You know, they are top secret. They're not top secret. I made them not top secret anymore, or they're not top secret anymore because time has passed. It's just all over the map, and none of it makes much sense to me. So,
yes. So, yeah. Truman, I'll have to ask, given that we've heard that now among the collection are some documents which include information about some other country's nuclear capability, and documents which we've understood have a very formal process to declassify, even if you're willing to buy into the declassification argument that Craig just mentioned. What are your Army buddies thinking now?
You know, to be perfectly honest, they are dead silent. I have not heard one peep over this. You know, the point is, we all went through the same training. We all dealt with the same level of security clearance. We all dealt with the same amount of data that was classified. And I can't imagine that they have any opinion other than the one that I hold, that this is beyond the pale. Just from our experience, you know.
Yes. So, Bruce, the wheels of justice, they're grinding away. What do you think? Who's going to be the leading contender to capture the bastard in the end?
Well, Craig can speak to this as well. It's very important that you sort of appeal decisions like this, because if you don't appeal them, they become part of the law. Mm-hmm. And any time a district judge makes a decision, as egregious as this one is, and as sort of unsubstantiated as this one is, to let it stand is, I think it's disastrous for the legal system. Craig, what do you think?
Real quickly, I have to take a little issue with that, Bruce. Mm-hmm. A district court judge's opinions don't carry much in the way of precedent precedential value. The risk is that now we're going to the 11th Circuit, and that opinion will carry precedential value. We lose that, or they lose, the government loses that. That's a serious issue. But I don't know. There's a lot of things out there that should be causing our former president a lot of sleepless nights that he could get caught up in that are not just technicalities, as they say.
All right. Well, let's just wrap this up with next week on the Brown Briefly. Our Smoth Talk guest is Vashon Islander Lennon Bronsema of the Washington Conservation Voters. He's their chief campaign officer. And they, that as a group, they advocate for environmental progress and justice through actions that mobilize the public, elect champions for the environment, and hold our leaders accountable. So tune in next week to hear Lennon's talk about the work they do. For Debbie, Bruce, Truman, and Craig, I'm Kevin Jones. I hope you'll join us next Tuesday for the next edition of the Brown Briefly.